Start with a prayer. God, please set aside everything I think I know about you, God, the steps, the big book, what's best for me, what's best for others. Especially help me let go of my old ideas so I can live on your truth. Heavenly Father, help me to carry your message today. In Jesus' name, amen. Okay, does everybody have one of these? Does anybody need one? I'm going to look at it a bit today. Anybody not have one?
I'll take a big one.
Oh, God. All right, we're being recorded. Let's behave. And Melissa, have you seen the spiritual checklist on the site? So we're going to talk a little bit about that. We're on 6 and 7 today. And there are two paragraphs in the big book on that. We've covered the big book up to this point. And I want to make a few observations. I told the group I wasn't sure what I was going to say today, but I saw some new things. There's so much on this. I would say that the key steps in my recovery are 6 and 7, which I have to practice all the time. And I was thinking about that line we read, some of us have tried to hold on to our old ideas and the result was nil until we let go absolutely. Everybody thinks that's good, right? Sounds great. Well, 6 and 7 is how you let go of your old idea right then. And you change that with God's idea and God's way of seeing things. And the result is nil in the moment if I'm holding on to my old ideas. And really, 6 and 7 should be titled, Drop Your Rock. Drop your rock. Drop what's dragging you down and separating you from God. And on the site, we have the daily inventory card that we got originally from the Joe and Charlie handout that I got, I don't know, 18 years ago. But it has the characteristics of self-will. And if I'm practicing these characteristics, then I'm separated from God and I'm disturbed and I get irritable, restless, and discontent and I become full of fear and angry and I make bad decisions. And so we don't want to live that way anymore. And it says, how do I feel? Restless, irritable, guilt, shame, discontent. Now for me, I think my whole life I was restless and discontented. Even when I was 4 or 5, there was just something missing. And it was the spiritual separation from God, seeking approval from the outside world. And then as I got older, I couldn't really know what that was. But I just knew that I had something. And of course, when I drank, that fixed that. So then alcohol became very dangerous because it was a treatment for my self-will and my separation from God. And I didn't realize that that's what got me here. It wasn't them. Did anybody have them that got us here? It wasn't the world, it was me. It was all me. I made decisions based on self that put me in a position to be harmed. My troubles were of my old making and they rise out of me. And I was self-will run riot. So we don't want to practice my self-centered character anymore. Now I've talked a lot about my tree, if it's planted in self-will soil, will produce these character defects and then the branches and the fruit look like crap. And it's full of resentment, fear, and shame, and guilt. And what we'd want to do in AA, the purpose of the steps is to replant our tree in God's soil, God's direction, and try to practice God's character. And then we have peace and joy, and we have beautiful fruit. The tree's beautiful. Now that sounds good, right? Everybody thinks that's a good idea, but it's hard to do. And the steps, starting with step 4 through 7 are breaking down our resistance to living a life run on self-will by seeing the truth about our ideas, the truth about our thinking. Until you do that, you don't know that you're seeing things wrong. and that we need to replant our tree. And we need to do that all the time. Now, step 10 and 11 is how we try to keep our tree mostly in God's soil. We slip a little bit every day, right? And sometimes we start out and our tree is not even near God's soil. And the day doesn't go well. And we have to stop and say, wow, I need to replant my tree. The other thing we could say is I need to drop my rock. And I don't mention that enough in the podcast, but it's really about dropping my rock. And am I going to do that and get undisturbed, or am I going to hold on to it? The one thing that's happened to me through the years is I've got better at seeing when I'm in my rock. And in fact, I can see it before I speak sometimes, because I say, well, maybe I shouldn't say that. You know, that's probably not a good idea. It's made my life at home a lot better. And with relationships with people, because I realize I may be on the wrong side. Is it loving? Is it kind? Is it necessary? Is it true? Am I bringing love in every situation? What am I bringing in? And so we don't talk about it, but we need to drop our rock. Now, I can't see what my rock is until I do step 4. I don't even know. That's what step 4 is about, seeing your old ideas, seeing how I see the world wrong when I'm looking through it through self-centered glasses. And until you do that, and you don't have to do it perfectly, you just have to do it enough to see the truth about your resentments, how to be free of anger, the truth about your fears, and where you're managing your life and you get fear, and the prayers for removal of fears, and then enough to look at your relationships, to see how self-centered you were and how you used people and relationships, both sexual relationships and other relationships, so that you don't act that way again. You want to learn how to see the truth. And then one of the things that really changed and helped me a lot was this book, Drop the Rock. And I've gone through it several times. I've gone through it on the site twice. I'm not sure that I'm going to go through it again this time around. I'm probably not. I want to go through 6 and 7 and then move on through the book so that the podcast will be in order. And then when we get through working with others, then we can think about this. But in this room years ago, I heard this story read, the introduction that dropped the rock, and this was probably 20 years ago, and maybe 18, and it really, really hit me. And somebody read this story, and I'm going to read it now. It says, seems there was this group of 12-step members taking a boat ride to this island called Serenity. Now, it's not called sobriety. You get it? It's serenity. That's the goal of the steps, emotional sobriety, peace, joy, fellowship with your fellow human beings, service to God and others. It was truly a happy bunch of people. As the boat pulled away from the dock, a few on board noticed Mary running down the street trying to catch up with the boat. One member said, "Darn, she's missed the boat." Another said, "Maybe not. Come on, Mary, jump in the water. Swim, swim. You can make it. You can catch up with us." So Mary jumped in the water and started to swim for all she was worth. She swam for quite a while and then started to sink. And that could be the analogy of people come to AA and they come in and they're very enthusiastic and they're doing it and all, and then all of a sudden they're gone. And she started to sink. And the members on board, now all aware that Mary was struggling, shouted, "Come on, Mary, don't give up, drop the rock." With that encouragement, Mary started swimming again, only to start sinking again shortly afterward. She was going under when she heard all those voices shouting to her, "Mary, drop the rock. Let go and drop the rock." Sounds pretty simple, doesn't it? Remember, when we come in, we have the desperation of a drowning man. So are you willing to, when you're drowning, you're willing to let go of everything, right? So why is Mary still holding on? Mary was vaguely aware of something around her neck, but she couldn't quite figure out what it was. Once more, she gathered her strength and started swimming. She was doing quite well, even gaining a little on the boat. But then she felt this heaviness pulling her under again. She saw all those people in the boat holding out their hands and howling for her to keep swimming and shouting, "Don't be an idiot, Mary. Drop the rock." Then she understood when she was going down for the third time. This thing around her neck, this was why she kept sinking when she really wanted to catch the boat. This thing was the rock they were all shouting about. Resentments, fear, dishonesty, self-pity, intolerance, and anger were just some of the things her rock was made of. "God, help me get rid of the rock," she prayed. "Now, get rid of it." Mary managed to stay afloat long enough to untangle a few of the strings holding that rock around her neck, realizing as she did that her load was easing up. See, we start feeling better when we start doing our fourth step. We start feeling better. We're saying prayers. We're recognizing truth. Things are being removed. Then with another burst of energy, she let go. She tore the strings off and dropped the rock. Once free of the rock, she was amazed how easy it was to swim, and she soon caught up with the boat. Those on board were cheering for her and applauding and telling her how great she was and how it was so good having her with them again, and how now they could get on with the boat ride and have a nice time. Isn't that a great story? But there's more. Mary felt great. It was just about to indulge in a little rest and relaxation when she glanced back to the shore. There, a ways back, she thought she saw something bobbing in the water, so she pointed out to some others. Sure enough, someone was trying to catch the boat, swimming for dear life, but not making much headway. In fact, it looked like the person was going under. Mary looked around and saw the concern on the faces of the other members. She was the first to lean over the rail and shout, "Hey, friend, drop the rock." I don't know about you, but I get emotional when I read that story. It's just pretty powerful. And so I try to get on that boat every day. And then what do I have to drop each day? Well, that's what 6 and 7 is all about. Then there was something really profound I read in this book. It's a story by someone by Charlie. By the way, if you're listening on the podcast, buy this book and read it. It doesn't take long. If you have a sponsor, buy him one or her one. Read it with them for a while. And it's very simple. It's not scripture. It's not the holy book. But it has some very practical ways of looking at the step through other people. Remember, God works through other people. And so they're sharing. And it says, Charlie said, "When I first came in, I wanted all the good things people had, but I didn't want to work for them." Sound familiar? "Oh, I worked the steps, at least the ones I thought I needed." I can't tell you how true this is. It was true for me. I didn't know any better. "And when it came to steps 6 and 7, I was ready and willing to have my higher power remove my shortcomings, should I have any, of course. I had no idea what they were because I didn't think I needed step 4 and thought I could skip step 5, but I prayed vaguely that should he see any shortcomings, I was ready for him to remove them. The principle of step 7 is humility, and I had none. As I made progress in recovery, I became aware of how many character defects and just how blind I'd been to them. Mercifully, my higher power showed me only what I was ready to see. I became depressed and thought I could never be forgiven for or relieved from these shortcomings. This depression I discovered was not humility, but another form of playing God, believing my character defects were more powerful than my higher power's forgiveness." And I've seen that in myself and others. "Then when I recognized who had the power and who was powerless, I had to decide if I was entirely ready to ask him to remove my shortcomings. I had to quit playing God." Why? It doesn't work. Now, I didn't know that when I came in here. And when I read that, I had to think about it for a while. Why didn't it work? Well, because I'm not God. It may sound like I was stupid, but the implication of it hit me at some point. You can't think you're God and play God. It's never going to work. And I, after all, my character defects are what I thought made up my personality, right? And I was pretty much in love with whom I thought I was. Self-will had been my higher power for a lifetime. I was afraid, not knowing that something better would take the place of my character defects. With all the honesty I was capable of at the time, I worked the steps in order, 1 through 6, then 7, asking as humbly as I could say, as I could, that my higher power remove my shortcomings. But guess what? They did not disappear. I was not struck pure. I've heard people read these two steps at the meeting in the two paragraphs and said, well, I've done 6 and 7, and you know, I'm moving on, and they have no idea what the real meaning of it. In the 12 and 12, he says that steps 6 and 7 separate the men from the boys, or the women from the, it's the necessity of the humility in step 7, and practicing that humility in step 7, 6, and practicing it all the time in step 7, that leads you to emotional sobriety. Then I read this. Then I was made aware that character defects are like active addiction. I couldn't keep using and expect God to relieve my disease. Now, this is in bold print. I had to read it twice. Neither could I keep practicing my character defects and expect God to remove them. Neither could I keep practicing my character defects and expect God to remove them. And Joe and Charlie, when they do 6 and 7, and they do it very succinctly, I think they spend 20 minutes, because you know they had this set spiel that they did for the weekend. But they talk about, I got very good at practicing my self-centered character. In fact, I was very good at it. And I'll be honest, I could be very good at it today. I still have that acute judgment of what's wrong with the whole world. But I don't want to practice it. That's the difference. And they said, we got good at practicing that, but we weren't good at practicing God's character. And so we had to work at it. You are what you practice. That's why it's an action step. So I have to stop practicing my character and practice God's character. And I need a relationship with God to be able to see to do that. If I don't have a relationship with God, I think I'm okay. And so it says in step 10, we watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. We watch for this. And who do we, because we're in the world of the Spirit now, remember? And the world of the Spirit is where God's the center. And if I'm in God's world, He's with me when I'm watching. And so it says when these crop up, not after I've screamed and yelled for 20 minutes and tried to strangle someone. No. When these crop up, I ask God and wants to remove them. I'm with God. I can see. I'm watching. And when they start to just to crop up, I can ask God to take them away. So they don't have to dominate my life. It doesn't say that your self-centered character won't come into your thoughts, because that's never going to happen. But we don't have to keep them there very long. And some people don't like that the spiritual axiom is that whenever I'm disturbed, no matter what the cause, there's something wrong with me. And they write me and tell me all about these examples and this and that. But what they're really getting at is if I'm disturbed, I'm in self. And I don't have to stay in self. I can stay with God. And I can see the situation. And then remember, we can forgive everything. We don't have to excuse everything, but we can forgive it because we have a relationship with God. And they said on the cross, you can forgive everything up and including crucifixion. And we can forgive, and we can change the way we see it, and we don't have to stay disturbed. Disturbed is when I'm in self. And Sandy Beach made the point that we don't shouldn't have disturbances anymore. We should have situations. And then we ask God, how do I handle this situation? It may not be one we like, but how do we handle it? What do we practice? And so At the end of this book, Drop the Rock, there's an excerpt from a talk that Sandy B gave, I believe, 45 years ago when he was younger. And he was invited to go to California by Chuck C's wife, who really liked Sandy Beach when she heard him talk. And Chuck didn't know anything about him. You know, he's an alcoholic. You know, I don't know, should I let this guy go or not? But Chuck C was such a great man. He wrote the New Pair of Glasses talks. And so Sandy came, excuse me, and this is recorded. I think you can listen to it. It's an old recording. And he went on to be a great teacher. He taught me so much. He was one of my great teachers, him and Joe and Charlie and some of the other speakers on XA on that first page. Everything I say, I've learned from them. And they were speaking, teaching me God's will for me, how carrying the message. So he says, if there's anybody new here tonight, and I hope there are some new people, there's one last thing that I think you have to do in order to have the miracle of AA take place. All you have to do, if you're new, is don't drink, right? Turn your life over to God and get rid of all of your old ideas. That's all we ask. That's all we ask you to do. When I heard about turning over all my old ideas, I realized that all of my old ideas was my whole game plan for a living. So when I work with the new guys, say, well, you know, everything you think you know is wrong. And they go, oh, got to get rid of him. But the truth is that everything I thought I knew when I came here was wrong. I was seeing things wrong. All my fears were wrong. They were wrong belief. All my resentments were wrong judgment. They weren't really true. When I heard about turning over my old ideas, I realized that all my old ideas were a new game plan for living. And he talks about that. He has a series of talks where he did the Saturday morning, and he went through a step a week. And he would spend 20 minutes on the first step every week, no matter what it was. And he said, you have to get rid of your game plan for living. It's never going to work. And he said, all AA does is say, okay, your game plan for living has never worked. Will you try a new plan? That's all that we're asking you to do in AA. That's why I ask a new person, try a different plan. And it's not my plan, it's the plan in this book, the steps. And if they don't want to try a new game plan and they're holding on to their game plan, it just doesn't work. You just find your butting heads, they don't want to follow through on things. And for those who've been around, work with people, and it's not their fault. They just don't want to give up their plan. And it's very hard, and that's why very few people make it in AA. Jimmy just celebrated 14 years. How many people you seen come in and out? You can't even remember. And it's not because they're bad and we're better than them. It's just that they couldn't give up completely on their plan. Now, what makes you want to give up on your plan? Pain, defeat, desperation. You have to be completely willing to go to any length. And how do you get that way? I think it's a gift. It's a gift that we get from God. One day he just shows me the truth and I just can't hold on anymore. I'm surrendered. But God will do that, but unless we start doing the action, the ego rebuilds. So that period of grace I think I got when I could see the truth, I had to sustain that. And other people helped me. So he says, my whole game plan was everything, every conviction, every attitude, every prejudice. Everything that I had about the world or my ideas, and it was like carrying around the 150-pound rock. Now, I don't like to watch the news. You know why? Because I see people carrying their rocks around and talking, and they're both sides. They're holding on the rocks. And I think the thing I've learned from the New Testament is Jesus says, please, let go of your rock. Carry my rock. Your life will be a lot better. But it was my rock, he says. It's mine. I put this thing together. This is the real me. I was this rock. And I came in here, and it was like I was in an ocean of alcoholism, and AA threw me a life preserver, but I'm hanging on to that rock. I'm not going to let that thing go, because this is my rock, and they're yelling out there, drop the rock. No, man, I can't drop the rock. I'm hanging on to the life preserver, and the boat's full of AA members is coming along, and I'm going under with the rock and hanging on. I got the thing, and they're going, hey, drop the rock out there. I'm going down under, and everybody's yelling, it's great up here, come on over. And I said, how do I get up there? They said, drop the rock, and you'll make it. But I don't want to drop the rock, because it's my rock. And we're laughing, but it was me. It was all of us. And something happened, and I was willing to let go in the beginning. And remember, it says, the desperation of a drowning man, what was initially a flimsy reed, becomes the powerful hand of God. And the more I drop the rock, the reed gets stronger. And so finally one day, I don't know, something terrible happened. Because it took my attention away, and I dropped it. And I was terrified, there goes my rock. And while I was looking down there, I was like a water skier. I came up out of the top of the water, and I'm going along, and I'm going, what the hell? Why did I want that rock anyway? And you know, that's why we want to hold on to those old ideas with a death grip. He says, I'll never understand it, but it's one of the paradoxes in AA. We want to hang on to the stuff that's killing us. I still remember, it was 4 or 5 weeks ago, sometime. There was a guy who comes occasionally, and we were doing resentments, and he said, you know, I've done a thorough 4-step, and I'm sponsoring people, but I have one resentment that I won't let go of. So what do you say? You see, why wouldn't he forgive this person? Why wouldn't he do it? It's his rock. And somehow, our rock, we think, works for us, but it's really pulling us down. Like you can see resentment today. The people have a resentment against someone who's holding them accountable. So they hate them. So who's suffering? You see, I don't want to suffer from holding on to my rock anymore. And here's what he says. And so if you're new, I hope this happens to you, and I want to be sitting out there next year, the year after that, whenever it takes place, because this is how I'll know about God even more. I want to be out there when some new person out there is standing up there, and you've got that sparkle in your eye, and you've got that whole vitality going about AA, and you're looking at some new guy, and you're saying, drop the rock. It's the greatest. Now, having done this meeting for quite a few years, I've seen people who were struggling, and they just couldn't do it. And then they come back after, and they look different, and they're sober. And I can think of 4 or 5 who are celebrating 5, 6, 10, 12, 14 years. Something happened. Something happened, and they were willing to drop their rock. And I don't want to pick up my rock today. That's what I've learned, and we're going to talk more about 6 and 7 next time. But I don't want to hold on to that anymore. Because why? I don't feel good. Now, how long can you stay sober, not drinking, not working the steps, and holding on to your rock and not drink? It's hard. People do it, but you can see they're pretty unhappy. But most of the time, the relief of alcohol or drugs will come in because we get so miserable carrying our rock. And so that's one of the paradoxes I see in recovery, is that we're holding on to things that are killing us, and we let go. And it's not just alcoholics. I see it with a lot of people. And the one thing I can't do is make you drop your rock. That has something that you have to do, and God working in you enough to tell you, drop it a little bit. Just let go a little bit. Okay, I want to congratulate Jimmy again. Jimmy's been great. Always great. I appreciate you coming here and celebrating. Jimmy had 14 years, for those listening on the podcast. Thank you. We'll pick up with 6 and 7 next time.